2 red states raise the minimum wage. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The minimum wage is going up in Arkansas and Missouri. Voters there approved increases in Tuesday's elections. That makes more than 20 states that have done so in recent years. Meanwhile, Congress hasn't increased the federal minimum wage in almost a decade. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra has more.
Up until now, it's mostly been blue states passing minimum wage hikes. But on Tuesday, 2 red states passed them, too. Over the next few years, the minimum wage will rise to $11 an hour in Arkansas and $12 in Missouri. The federal minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour. David Cooper is an analyst at the Economic Policy Institute.
I think that as the gap between workers in states that have raised their minimum wage and workers in states that have chosen not to grows, it's only going to put more pressure on Congress to do something.
But Jared Bernstein at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities says it'll be hard to get a minimum wage hike through a Republican-controlled Senate that doesn't want to raise labor costs for companies.
I wouldn't assume that because there have been all these positive state ballot measures on the minimum wage that the federal government is ready to move. They've resisted that aggressively, particularly Republicans.
Last week, White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow said he didn't think there should be a federal minimum wage at all. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
Also on Tuesday, 3 of the country's most conservative states voted to expand Medicaid, providing health coverage to hundreds of thousands of low-income residents. This was a major part of Obamacare that only 8 years ago these states were refusing to implement. Marketplace's Ben Bradford looks at what's changed.
In 2010, protesters filled the grounds of the Capitol as a Democratic-led Congress passed the healthcare overhaul. In Idaho, Governor Butch Otter slammed the law's Medicaid expansion as budget-busting.
It would saddle our children and our children's children with what Thomas Jefferson called the moral canker of a staggering public debt.
Fast forward 8 years, and that same governor shot an ad urging voters to approve that expansion.
Proposition 2 is an Idaho-grown solution.
And voters followed his lead. Georgetown Health Policy Professor Joan Alker says it's because they can now look to neighboring states that have expanded coverage without busting their budgets.
A lot of the scaremongering that was being thrown about has not come to pass.
One reason, the federal government still covers most of the cost of the Medicaid expansion, meaning voters know they'll see little increase on their state's tab. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 4-8% range, with the Dow future down 106 points. A big part of what Democrats intend to do when they take over the House in January is investigate. Representative Maxine Waters is in line to chair the House Financial Services Committee. She told Bloomberg TV her top priorities include strengthening the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and investigating the National Flood Insurance Program. She also wants to look at Deutsche Bank's dealings with President Trump.
And we know that Deutsche Bank is identified as one of the biggest money laundering banks, you know, in the world, perhaps, and that they're the only ones who were, amenable to providing loans to this president.
Deutsche Bank paid $630 million last year to settle accusations it didn't do enough to stop about $10 billion of Russian money laundering.
James in Bridgewater, New Jersey, wrote to express his appreciation for the way that Marketplace presents business and economic news at the everyman and everywoman level and offers insights not provided by other news outlets. Now, if you agree with James, please join him as a Marketplace investor by donating online at marketplace.org. Thanks to James and everyone who makes our work possible.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
You can, these days, pay for things, of course, using credit and debit cards, but also social media and your phone. So where does that leave cash? and ATM companies. One in every three ATMs in the world is made by an Ohio company called Diebold Nixdorf. It announced last week it would lay off 1,600 employees, but executives say the company is turning a corner. From the Marketplace Hub at WCPN IdeaStream in Cleveland, Adrian Ma reports.
The U.S. market for ATM machines has been slow in recent years. That's according to David Tenty with the ATM Industry Association.
You know, I wouldn't call it saturated, but it's quite mature.
But he says there are opportunities for growth, especially in developing countries.
Many of which are just starting to get their ATM populations kicked up.
Also, he says, the amount of U.S. cash in circulation keeps growing. According to the Federal Reserve, it's near a record $1.7 trillion. But Fed surveys also suggest two-thirds of customer payments happen on credit or debit cards or through online banking. That's a growing headwind for ATM sellers here and worldwide, says Paul Condra. As a market research analyst, he's followed the payments industry for about 5 years. And he says mobile payment apps are taking off in places like China, India, and Kenya. In those countries,
you might have this leapfrogging effect where the digital money grows quicker than cash.
That's not to say ATMs are going away anytime soon. As U.S. banks continue to downsize branches, replacing human tellers with terminals often means upgrading to fancier machines with apps that run in the cloud or give bankers the ability to video chat with customers.
So the industry as a whole is shipping fewer devices, but more sophisticated solutions.
Devin Watson is head of marketing at Diebold Nixdorf in North Canton, Ohio. Beyond machines that dispense currency, he says the company has diversified. Increasingly, it's focused on selling software and retail kiosks, the kind you might see at a grocery store or restaurant. He lets me try one, a 3-foot touchscreen with pictures of burgers and shakes.
Yeah, I'll add fries to that.
You can tap to pay, you can get your receipt, you can go get your meal.
He says machines like this are one way Diebold's trying to stay ahead of digital payment trends. According to Federal Reserve estimates, one in four consumers used a mobile device to pay for something in 2015. 2 years later, that increased to one in three. In Cleveland, I'm Adrian Ma for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishor with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.